He's a superstar, yeah. He's a superstar, yeah.
Told y'all.
He's a superstar, yeah.
Superstar, blowing smoke at the hookah bar. The bullet wound on my neck is a Ruger scar. Pop bottles, yo, but not just pain. You drink Cristal? Oh, that's a damn shame. I down Kettle One bottles of that Grey Goose, that White Hennessy. Then I smash the boot for real superstar. Check out the booty, yo.
How's it going, everyone? You're listening to Loika Mania episode 29. My name is Pat Loika. And it's been a while, and I apologize for that. As you're aware, I went to the Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle. And I also had a few other things come up right when I got home, so I wasn't able to get back into the podcasting thing. So I had to, you know, take a break. But I'm back now, and I want to talk briefly about a couple books that I've read over the last week before we get to the main event, which is a special guest. I have my good friend Evan Valentine on board for the next segment. He is a comedian, improv guy, and he does a rock opera thing featuring Thor, which is kind of fun. And we will talk about that. We'll talk about some comics that we're into and some of the stuff we've been enjoying. And before we get to that, I just want to quickly touch upon a couple of books that I read this week that I thought people should be paying attention to. First off is Fear Itself, the Fear Itself prologue, which is the Book of the Skull. This is by Ed Brubaker, and what's going on with my pronunciation? It's by Ed Brubaker, and illustrated by Scott Eaton, inked by Mark Morales, and colored by Sonny Go. And it's a wonderful little book because it features a couple of Cap villains that we've been seeing in the last year's worth of Cap stories, particularly Sin, who has taken upon herself to assume the mantle of the Red Skull, and Baron Helmet Zemo, who is a really unpredictable character lately, and I like that because there's something about him. There's an inherent nobility in Zemo, and I think we're seeing some of that at play here. At the same time, we're also seeing a bit of his nasty side as well, which we saw him recently use in Cap. And the two of them team up to search for a certain item that Sin has been looking for, something that the Red Skull has stashed away. And I'm not going to go into spoilers in this, but let's just say she finds something very intriguing, and which is obviously going to lead into what's going on in Fear Itself. The art's really great. Scott Eaton really deserves to be put in a... in something that's bigger. I mean, this is a big-time book because it's a Fear Itself prologue, but he needs to be put in a good ongoing where people can see more of his work because he is vastly underrated, and he's been doing some top-notch work since he signed with Marvel after the whole cross-gen thing ended. And I thought he's been fantastic in every book he's been in, like Wolverine Origins and X-Men Legacy. And I think it's time for him to really catch on, and time for him to be put in a mainline book. I think he'd be great on Cap, if you ask me. He'd add a very different look to the book, I think, compared to what's going on now. But I think maybe it's time that book had a change as far as the look goes. Because after seeing him render, some Cap here, some of Bucky and Namor, and of course Zemo and Sin, I think he's ready for the big times. So, well, Marvel should consider putting him in a really big book, something worthy of his talent. But that's just me talking. At any rate, this is a really fun book. Not quite scary as you would think based on the cover, because the cover really evokes a certain kind of imagery. But this has Nazis, it has the occult, and it has all kinds of fun stuff that you would expect from Ed Brubaker and him playing around with World War II related stuff. I'm always down for a Nazi and occult thing because those type of stories have always been fun to me. I always enjoyed them. So give this book a chance. I know a lot of people are talking about how they're not really feeling events or whatever, but I think this is going to be a start for a different kind of event. And it feels like, from what I've been hearing and, you know, from Matt Fraction and, of course, from what I've been gathering from this book, this looks like it's going to be a heck of an event book that's going to be different and it's going to be a lot of fun. So give that a look. Once again, this is the Fear Itself prologue, The Book of the Skull. Next is quite possibly one of my favorite books this week. It is Uncanny X-Men Annual number 3 for the year 2011. It's the first chapter of the Escape from the Negative Zone mini-event. It's written by James Asmus and illustrated by Nick Bradshaw. And I love this book quite a bit. Nick Bradshaw is a guy whose work has caught my eye recently because his work seems to evoke, you know, Arthur Adams. And in a good way. You know, you see the crazy details and the insane line work that's very much a staple of Art Adams' work. And you see that here. And at the same time, Bradshaw makes it work for him. And he has his own style. You know, and his panel compositions and his layouts are all him. And it's really beautiful. And he's paired with he's paired with a colorist that really brings out the best of his work. And that's Jim Charalampidis. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, and I apologize if I mispronounce it. But yeah, he does a fantastic job complementing Bradshaw's work. And this is one of the most beautiful books I've picked up in a while. There's a two-page spread here that's gorgeous, and it involves a giant monster and Dr. Nemesis and Namor. And speaking of Nemesis and Namor, they, along with Scott Summers, Cyclops as we all know him, and Hope Summers, are the main characters of this book. And I enjoy an X-Men book where there's a lot of tension and a lot of bickering, and we get quite a bit of that here. Dr. Nemesis and Namor specifically have been great. There's a callback to a classic X-Men moment right when you start the book. And I don't want to ruin it because that's just not my style. So pick up this book. I mean, you'll be surprised. I mean, I know this is a first chapter of a three-part story that's sort of a crossover between three different annuals, but it's really worth a shot. I mean, in worst-case scenario, it's just three books that you've spent money on. But when you check out this art and you if you're a fan of any of these characters at all, I think you will dig this book. So give it a try. Once again, it's Uncanny X-Men Annual number 3 for the year 2011, and it's Escape from the Negative Zone Part 1. You'll probably thank me for this later. So that's that. Anyways, I'll be back. I'm going to take a quick break, and when I return, I will have my friend Mr. Evan Ballantyne joining me, and we will be talking about all kinds of nonsense. So stick around.
Yo, I respect my tour bus. We got horns with no drawers, ready to do all four of us. Wildin', bustin' big bags of ruffles, show money. Rubber bands up in the duffel with dirt bomb niggas that steal cake from stores. Boosting niggas that pop tags in the mall. Two spot hoggies, used a few stockings. Niggas hand over the cash and he's today not get a single love out.
And we're back for our next segment. And here, as promised earlier, is my guest. He is a comedian. And he's also a really good friend of mine, actually. He's a guy that I've roomed with on many a New York Comic Con, and I met him, I think, about 5 or 6 years ago at a Baltimore Comic Con, and we've been good friends ever since. His name is Evan Ballantyne, and he is a complete jerk. Hi, Evan.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me on, man.
Hey, no problem. I mean, I've always been interested in the type of stuff you do, because you've been kind of expanding beyond doing the old geek comedy tour up in the East Coast, and you've been doing this Thor rock opera thing or whatever it's called.
Yeah, it was. We've actually been doing that. I think we've had like about a dozen performances of that so far, It's been going really well. We recently created a Facebook page for that and everything, but we're hoping that we can get some, you know, with the movie coming out and everything, and we're hoping we can get some, you know, some more people looking at that, just because it is completely and utterly ridiculous in its premise.
Yeah, it's fun though, because I've always been kind of a fan of the just people trying to make ridiculous things into musicals. I just think there's a lot of imagination involved in that, and just and the possibility for all kinds of good comedy comes out of that. So
yeah, it was kind of like how it had originated and everything was just that. I had a couple guys that I knew in high school that we created a band, and it was like called The Champions and everything. And so we had been discussing during a recording session, and we would do these recording sessions every once in a while, and we would think of ideas that we could, you know, we had access to a band, and so we were just bouncing ideas off each other. And I thought of the idea, well, wouldn't it be funny if Thor had come down to Earth and tried to, like, flip burgers at a burger joint. Let's just go with that and see what we can do. And we did it on the first try, and that's the one that we've been using ever since. We've hardly made any changes to it originally just because it worked so well the first time. But, yeah, we're really happy with it. I think there's a couple YouTube videos of it. But, yeah, it's been great so far. We love doing that kind of alternative comedy kind of stuff. And while I still do the stand-up and everything, it's nice to branch out with, you know, different methods of, you know, comedy and performance art and all that stuff.
Yeah, and how did the stand-up thing come about? I know you were part of you performed a couple of New York Comic Cons, you know, since mm-hmm. I've known you, and I was always curious how you got started with that particular type of comedy troupe, you know, because you guys had like the big geek comedy tour thing that I remember you were a part of. And how do you get mixed up with those people?
we still do shows for that from time to time. It's still, obviously I did the New York Comic Con last year. We'll see if we do it again this year, you know, fingers crossed. But how I had gotten started with the Geek Comedy Tour was just that there was this guy named Chris Berlick, and he was the guy who put it all together. And I was just starting out in stand-up comedy in D.C., and it was one of my first shows that I did at a local bar in Arlington, Virginia. And I saw this guy, and he was wearing like an anime shirt at the time. And I was fresh out of college, and I knew what it was. So I was just like, hey, nice shirt. And he's like, oh, you recognize what this is. Want to be part of a tour where we talk about stuff like this? And it's like, yeah, I guess. And so we started doing it, and it's a lot of fun to play to those kind of crowds. It's certainly easier. I mean, when it comes to stand-up comedy, for the most part, like, unless you're doing a show that's at specifically, like, a comedy club, you have to do shows at, like, you know, bars or coffee houses or open mics, you know, various places like that where the audience isn't as, you know, they're not as open as they are at, like, say, a comic book convention where everyone's just sitting down and, like, listening to what the comedian has to say on stage.
Well, yeah, they want to pay attention if you, you know, to make sure that you got your continuity right and all that.
Yeah. So they can just beat the crap out of us afterward for, like, saying that Spider-Man has organic webbing as opposed to mechanical shooters in the comic books right now. Yeah, I mean, it's a blast to do those shows. Each of us on the tour still does, you know, stand-up comedy ourselves, and where we don't have, you know, a lot of the nerd jokes. But, you know, it's fun to go and do those, you know, shows where someone will, you know, get a reference to Spider-Man or get a reference to, like, Star Wars that, you know, most of the general population won't get. So it's fun.
On that regard, I mean, what's the you have a lot of bits I know of. What is what joke really went over with
oh, what, the most like people? What's my best nerd joke?
Yes.
Okay, well, my favorite joke that I do currently that has you know, kind of the geeky reference is my joke about Ghostbusters, which is basically, I had been watching Ghostbusters one time, and the basic premise of the joke is just that, like, the scariest movie that I've ever seen is Ghostbusters, because not because of the ghosts, mind you, but because of the hate that the Ghostbusters have for the ghosts. And if you watch that scene where Bill Murray is in the hallway and he's about to shoot Slimer with the proton pack, you know, Slimer's not doing anything wrong. He's just sitting there and he's eating food that they were going to throw away, like, themselves, and, like, that nobody was really looking at. And so when he's talking with Ray on the walkie-talkie, he just goes, well, Ray? Yes, Franklin, what is it? It's a ghost, Ray. Really? What's it doing? Well, it looks like he's eating garbage they were going to throw out and generally minding his own business. Light him up. Fuck him up. Shoot lightning out of your gun at him. Hold on a minute. I'm going to bring the box down. He throws the box underneath him. He's just screaming as he gets ripped into this box. And he goes, ah, am I going to heaven? You're never going to heaven. You're going into this filthy, smelly, disgusting box where you will be transferred into the vault in the basement of our firehouse, where you will be raped repeatedly by larger ghosts that we have collected over the years. Have you ever seen the Puffed Marshmallow Man's chunk? Even if you have, get ready for a refresher course. If you haven't, here's a hint. It looks like a marshmallow. Okay? Ghostbusters, bitch. That's what you get for being different.
I think I heard. I think you did this at the New York Comic Con last year. Then you used this.
Yeah, I did.
I did see the crowd reaction to that. I thought it went over really well.
Yeah.
One of your jokes that really stood out for me, like way back when I think the first time I saw you perform was the Silver Surfer joke, the Galactic.
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't do that joke much because for the most part, like a lot of the shows that we do are. They won't be primarily comic book shows, so I feel like a lot of people won't get it, but I do love that joke. It's just like, basically, and I mean, any comic book fan can understand the fact that, you know, comic books in general are, and this has, like, started to wane over the years, you know? They're becoming more accepted with all the comic book movies that are coming out.
Uh-huh.
But when it comes down to it, like, you know, comic books are still looked down upon. They're still considered, you know, kiddie and childish and all that stuff by, like, a good percentage of the population. But, like, when you think about it, like, there's kind of a good reason for that sometimes. It's kind of like, yes, it's like you can make your friends believe that comic books are adults and for adults if you can do the following, which is explain to them the concept of Galactus without bursting out into laughter. So it's just like, okay, so there's this guy who eats planets, right? And he's purple. No, wait, he has antlers. No, let's stop. Focus on that. He has a big G on his belt. No, just forget I said that part. He has a herald who takes him to different planets, and he is a naked silver man on a surfboard. Apparently, Galactus knows about the human sport of surfing and is able to convey that into his herald. Also, they're watched by a giant baby in a bathrobe, which is
a little bit
terrifying. And he's sworn not to interfere.
Yeah, I always liked that joke. I think I saw you perform that. I thought that got quite a good response also from the crowd that you had the couple, back in 08 when you first did, when they had you in that weird stage in the middle of the Javits Center.
Yeah. But I also did that. I did that joke before, like, when was that? When I did it at the Benbow Agogo, when we did it at the bar and everything.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. That was a fun time.
Was that like 06? Because that was when I met.
That was in the same year, dude.
That was 08?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. 3 years ago, huh? Oh, the longer.
Oh, God. But, yeah. I can't believe it's been that long.
No, yeah. But that's cool, man. Like, I remember when I met you for the first time. I think it was actually at a Baltimore convention.
Yeah, it was Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you gave me some of your copies of Path to Armageddon, which I still have, which nice. Are, you know, awesome.
Good. That's good to hear. At least someone thinks it's awesome.
I'm still waiting to see what happens, personally.
The trade's been out, dude. I don't know if you ever got the trade.
Oh, no. I'll have to look at it. Is it Amazon?
No.
Would you like to take this opportunity to plug the where they can buy it?
That's not what this is for. That's, you are perverting this podcast with your pouring of my work. That's not allowed. We're here to talk about you. Since we are on the subject of comics anyway, what have you been reading lately? I mean, what have you been getting into?
The most recent single issue that I bought. And this will always be my weakness in the fact that everyone has those characters that they like that everyone else thinks is terrible. Like, one of them for me is Darkhawk. Like, I will buy anything that Darkhawk is in, but I'll also do it for Venom because I was a huge 90s kid. I grew up on the Clone Saga, the Ghost Rider, like the Midnight Suns.
Oh, man. And I was totally down with the Midnight Sun stuff.
Yeah, right? I mean, it was really good. I loved all that.
Just seeing Blade and Morbius teaming up with Ghost Rider, there was something about
it
that was awesome.
Night Stalkers, the Darkhold Redeemers, they came out with those awesome, like, covers, like a black envelope.
Oh, yeah, the Midnight Massacre, when Blade had the power of the Demogorge, and he was killing people, like the Demo Goblin and all these other characters that are not even related to them. Like, whoa, what happened
that.
To Blade? He went crazy. he's murdering people. Oh, man, that was
Johnny Blade's just secretly like, it's because he's black. And it's like, whoa, Johnny. Like, let's not go there, please.
They really need to release that in trade because that's...
No, they do. And, I mean, I think, like, myself, I believe that the 90s has a really bad stigma to it in the fact that, you know, everybody, if it's like, if it happened in the 90s, most people will look down on it, like, without, you know, any other explanation.
Yeah, and
as to what it is.
I think it's rather unfair that people look down on it that way because, I mean, if they look closely, Preacher started in the 90s. Sandman was underway in the 90s. Transmetropolitan started in the late 90s. There's a ton of good books that were coming out in the 90s that people are just, you know, dismissing because like the first couple of years were full of insane, you know, there were a lot of bad comics. And, you know, and you could say that about any decade, though, you know. I thought they were rather unfair. There was a glut for a little bit in like the early to mid 90s. But there was, amidst all that, there was a lot of quality stuff coming out.
Yeah. And, you know, for all the, you know, shame and backlash that the Clone Saga got for Spider-Man, it sold the most of, like, any Spider-Man run ever, you know?
Yeah, well... you have to be... And let's be honest. I mean, I don't like the Clone Saga. I didn't like it. I never did. But I stuck through with it because I wanted to know what's going to happen.
Yeah. If you reread those issues, the dialogue is just awful. Like, it's unbelievably bad. Mm-hmm. But some of the ideas were pretty all right. Of, like, Ben Reilly and all that stuff. But even still... Yeah.
shake
your head in shame.
No. I'm always shocked at conventions when people ask me for sketches of the Scarlet Spider. He is probably he is in the top 10 as far as the most requested characters I ever get. You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's in the top 10. I draw a Scarlet Spider at least once or twice in a con, or twice, or maybe like three times a year, I would say.
You should just draw one Scarlet Spider thing, make a print of it, and be like, here you go.
I should do like a prepared sketch, and then I'll just color it over there.
I never want to draw this character again. Here you go. But, I guess, going off on the tangent about 90s comics, I was...
It's fine, man. That'll be fine. It's a good conversation. So, what are you actually trying to get into lately? What have you been doing?
What's that?
You were reading Venom number one, you said, right?
Oh, yeah. Venom by Rick Remender and Tony Moore, which is just about, you know, I'll read anything that Rick Remender and Tony Moore, I'll read anything that either of those guys do solo, let alone together, you know? And so it's a really interesting concept that they did with Venom, in that they took Flash Thompson, who is like Spider-Man's biggest fan, put him in the Venom suit, made him a government operative, and now he's going on like missions for the UN and for the US Army, where he's constantly having to worry about not only like surviving the mission, but also the symbiote slowly like taking control of him. So it's kind of like, it's a really interesting, as someone who like really likes like way out there ideas, like I myself personally loved Remender's Frankencastle.
Oh, I love that book. That is...
Yeah, I mean, as someone who loves, like, the Marvel monsters and everything, that was just, like, a great thing to have, you know, all those characters put together. It was a cool kind of take on Frank Castle put into a world that he, like, has never been a part of before.
Yeah, and the so, fact, I mean, it's such a high concept. And the fact that... And I was kind of taken aback by the backlash that run had, because, you know what, dude? This is the Punisher in the Marvel Universe. Of course this is going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you want... Like, I can totally understand when people want, you know, the Punisher and they don't want him with superheroes. That's understandable. That's why there's Punisher Max.
Mm-hmm.
But for those people who want Frank Castle to interact with, like, Spider-Man, Daredevil, you know, stuff like that, that's why the, you know, that's why there's, in the regular Marvel Universe, there's a book for him. And why not go crazy with, like, you know, him in different situations like that, you know? I haven't been reading In the Blood, which is the most recent Punisher one. I'm waiting for that to come out in trade, but, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, the way they, and I thought they were really clever when they brought him back from being, you know, when they kind of brought him back to the way he used to be. He made him human again. I thought they were clever with that. I thought they could have had another. They could have run for another year with him as Frankencastle, and they would have.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that because of some of the backlash of people who weren't even reading the book, mm-hmm. they kind of had to pull the plug a little early. But yeah. You know, I definitely could have gone for an additional year of that just to see where it had, you know, gone, because the stories that were set up were, you know, so good, like him meeting the squad of monsters and him fighting Dokken, really just great stuff.
And if you think about it, there is room for them, there's some wiggle room for them to do some more. I mean, that final issue where he gets restored, there's you know, there's a bit of a time jump between like when he gets to Monster Island and then when we see him back as being human.
So oh, yeah, so you're it. Saying they could do more stories with Frankie
Castle. Yeah, they could still do more stories of that, and have, you know, his adventure in Monster Island, just messing around
with Monster. Which is, who doesn't want to read Frank Castle as the Frankenstein monster fighting Fing Fang Foom and, you know, the Mole Man's monsters and things like that? Come on, it writes itself.
You got to have either no heart or just have to hate fun. If you don't like,
yeah, it's
but
and we hate neither of those things.
Exactly. With regards to Venom, I was really impressed with the concept. I thought it was mm-hmm. cool. I really liked the redesign too, and I thought it's a nice change for the character, or for the I guess for the concept. It's because Venom really is more of a concept than a character at this point. You know, it's whoever wears the suit and what the suit does to the person, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm really impressed by what they've done with it. I read the first issue, and I really like the art. I really like Tony mm-hmm. Moore a lot, actually, but I don't think he has been paired with the right inker, in my opinion.
Oh, no? I mean, you definitely have a better eye for that than I do when it comes to, you know...
And I believe like there's a lot. They encounter some problems putting that issue out too. Remember how Tony Moore got some of his art stolen?
Yeah, he got it stolen. I mean, that is. I couldn't even begin to imagine putting that much work into, you know, into a product and having, you know, putting your blood, sweat, and tears into it. You know, sending it off and somebody jacks it, and like you have to completely redo it again. Like, you know, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it really is. I'm glad the book did come out, though. And of course, we've kind of talked about something else with regards to the third issue, which kind of disappoints me, but, you know, it's expected. Yeah, I'm glad Tony's on this book, though. I don't know how many issues in a row he'll be able to pull off when he, as the book goes on. But
I'm looking forward to his Kraven the Hunter issue in the Savage Land, which is the next one coming up.
That sounds like a lot of fun. yeah, I really liked it. Remender really can do no wrong in my book. Do you read Uncanny X-Force that he writes?
Yes, I do, actually. It is really, really good stuff. I was a big fan of Uncanny X-Force before Remender started doing it, and I was kind of nervous because they had set up, you know, so many awesome concepts and such a good team, and they built upon, but they also made it something completely new. So it's good to see, you know, this team of, you know, very, like, it's funny because I've always been a proponent of, you know, reading stories, like, at Marvel sometimes where, like, a hero is a hero and they don't, you know, they always make hard choices where they don't have to kill a villain or something. But the way Remender writes his Uncanny X-Force now is just, you know, some people have to die. and so you can totally get behind it when they have to make, like, the hard decision of whether or not they're going to kill Apocalypse as a baby so that in the future that he won't be able to trouble them or anything. And that was just, like, a great emotional, you know, couple of issues that he came up with.
Yeah,
and I'm glad that he's using Jason Aaron's Deathlocks from his run on Wolverine Weapon X.
Yeah, I thought the bit when they offed the kid was really great. I thought just the way everyone reacted. Nobody said a word after that. You know, they were kind of changing their tune, and then nobody said a word. And then when they dealt with it, the next issue, in issue 5, there was this bit where they were having a conversation about it, Psylocke and Wolverine, and they were having a conversation. It was just really cool. And they added Deadpool, especially. They added a new layer to Deadpool in that. I'm like, well, this is probably the most – this probably made Deadpool into an actual living person to me, because, like, even this guy thought that there was something wrong with that, because they're right. He's never killed kids. He's never gone that far.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, so I thought it was very – I thought it was really well done. I thought the characterizations were spot on for all of them. Psylocke is, you know, she's kind of on the brink of kind of having, like, a real dark side because of what she's gone through. Archangel, you know, he's screwed up big time. And
I love what they. I always that was my favorite part of Uncanny or of just X-Force in general is when they brought Angel into it, mm-hmm. and they gave him that Archangel, you know, personality.
Yeah,
so he can switch back and forth, which is great because I love both of those. You know, I love him as Angel, I love him as Archangel, so it's good for him to just be able to switch back and forth, and readers can experience, you know, nice Angel in, you know, Uncanny X-Men, whereas in Uncanny X-Force, he's basically a killing machine that still has Apocalypse programming.
Yeah, and
so it's neat.
I'm really excited about this whole the Dark Angel saga, which is coming up in the next in the next few months. So that should be very interesting.
I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to them delving into the Age of Apocalypse again, going back to the '90s, man. And
Age of Apocalypse.
X-Men, Age of Apocalypse was the. You know, that was the shit.
As far as events go, it was hard to top that. I don't think they have topped it. I mean, as far as, like, pure X-Men events, nothing has ever came close to just. I mean, and the thing is, there are a lot of factors involved in that event being so good. The fact that we didn't have the internet as crazy as it is back right now.
Yeah,
and we didn't know what the hell was going on.
It's good and bad, you know.
Yeah, we were like, what the hell's going on? What happened? And I remember, like, there were ads for, like, some store for doing, like, funerals for Professor X. Like, he's really dead. Oh, no. And then they canceled the X-Books. No way.
That reminds me of a funny – I know that you and I share the same favorite event book, which is Infinity Gauntlet.
Yes.
I'd assume correct in stating that, right?
That's right.
And it's funny because that's exactly the same thing. When I was reading that when I was a kid, which was one of the first comics I had gotten, and that issue where Thanos kills all of the Marvel heroes, that was before I knew that they could bring heroes back. So I just legitimately thought that they were all dead forever. Like, oh, crap, Spider-Man got his head bashed in with a rock. I guess I can't read any more Spider books.
all those books took place before he got killed.
It's like, how are they going to tell Aunt May that he died in space by Femme Thanos? It's a tough conversation to have.
I remember reading when I was following the Infinity Gauntlet, and I was having some I was having difficulties finding issues because, like, I didn't have an actual comic store to go to back then, and it was tough because I remember getting 4, and I was like figuring out when is number 5 come out, when is it, and then next thing you know, number 6 is out. I'm like, oh, because I was living, I was living in the Philippines back then, so I really the comic store thing wasn't really they didn't really have like a solid infrastructure there, the comics distribution system or whatever. So it became really difficult for me to get stories. So I got number 4 and then I got number 6 and I'm like, oh, they brought everyone back. But what happened? I wanted to see what happened with the gods. What happened to Galactus?
What do you call all the gods and how did that go and everything,
Yeah. Yeah, that still holds that's still it can't be topped in my book, no matter how well written or how good some of the events.
It had legitimately like everything that you could want from a giant like comic book crossover, because it showed you the perspective so well from every single character. You had scenes where Wolverine and the Hulk were sitting on a rooftop contemplating how they're both killers, while you have Spider-Man freaking out because the world's coming to an end. Thanos is slowly killing half, like, the population of everything. It's just a really well-put-together book in general.
Yeah, I remember I read up on there's an art book they put out for George Perez. He talked about why he left the book, because he's like, there's too much of the good guys getting beat. I'm like, well, that's the thing. You have to build up Thanos as, like, this badass that kills
everyone. He is God in that book, pretty much. I mean, they show you that in the first, the first page of him just saying, I am God, in giant, like, stone letters.
I would love for them to reprint that in an oversized edition. I was happy that...
Did they not have one for him?
They put out a hardcover. It's a premiere edition, though. Not an oversized book.
Oh, not like an Absolute or Omnibus.
Not like that. I would love an Omnibus with the Infinity Trilogy. I'd be down with that.
Oh, yeah, because I kept up to date with all of those, like the Infinity War, where it was all like the doppelgangers and the Magus, and Infinity Crusade, which was kind of like Civil War before Civil War happened, in a much more cosmic, setting.
I thought Crusade got a bad rap. I think it was.
Oh, it does. It gets a bad rap of the three.
Yeah, it gets a bad rap. I thought Infinity War was a lot of fun. It was, it was the heroes fighting their dark sides, and then while they're all fighting each other, Thanos is doing his, his back to his old tricks and with the Magus and all that. And then, as far as the goddess is concerned, in Infinity Crusade, it was a holy war, and I thought.
The fact that they delved into all of the heroes' different religious beliefs, and that was the basis for what team they went on, was really cool.
Yeah, I thought they handled that really well, and I thought they had the epilogue was really sad. Silver Surfer was in Bosnia or something, and he watches as people got gunned down, and he cries. So sad.
When doesn't Norrin Rad just weep openly? He does that all the time.
Well, he's not doing that these days. I mean, these days he's back. He's back working for Galactus again.
Yeah, and he's a member of the Annihilators as part of DNA's.
Heck of a name. Heck of a name, right there. Annihilators.
They're not very creative.
They sound like a hardcore metal band or something.
Hey, we're the Annihilators! This is Bat Ray Bill!
We got a giant silver man on the sticks, and this is a weird alien horse thing that has Thor's hammer. I don't know.
They got two guys with hammers there. They got Ronan, and they got Ben Ray Bill.
They got to figure that out amongst themselves, who is going to be the guy on the team who has a hammer, because there's just one too many.
Hey, look good. And then they got the dude with the mohawk, you know, Gladiator. I think he can be the lead singer.
Oh, yeah, sure. He was made for that, you know. He's very confident. So,
yeah,
I actually did buy Thanos Imperative recently from yeah, that was a really good, it was kind of in the same vein as, like, the Infinity trilogies, you know, with Thanos kind of at the forefront of it, with, you know, dark versions of the heroes. And they were like, H.P. Lovecraft version of the heroes, which is...
They name drop Shuma-Gorath, and like, oh, yes!
That's my boy! He just play him in Marvel vs. Capcom.
Exactly. Yeah, I saw the purple tentacles, and oh, man, is this... And then they saw, like, the language that Mar-Vell was speaking, like, oh, and then he name drops Shuma-Gorath, like, oh, God, it's him! It's awesome!
He's coming back after so many years of waiting.
Well, apparently they use Shuma-Gorath also in that not that good, unfortunately. I think it's is it the Invaders Now book or something?
Oh, I have no idea. That's the Alex Ross one, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, I am not feeling those books, and no matter how much I want to try to get into them, unfortunately, they haven't been working for me. I don't know if something about the art is off-putting.
Yeah, I know that. It's funny, because I think Alex Ross, like, writes them, but he doesn't do the artwork, which would, if he were to do the artwork, I think it would be a much bigger, you know, selling point, obviously.
It would be a bigger deal, but I'll be honest with you, I'm not really the biggest Alex Ross fan.
Oh, no.
He does great covers and posters and all that every now and then, and I thought Kingdom Come was amazing. Mm-hmm. Marvel's was great, too, but I think as far as storytelling goes, I don't really think he's that great as a storyteller, you know. I don't think he's...
I haven't read... You mean just in the way that he presents his artwork or in the way that he actually writes?
Well, it's not about the writing, you know. He's not... I never really think of him much as a writer. I was more concerned about the storytelling and his art, you know.
Oh, okay.
On how fluid the panels are and all that. There's just something missing, in my opinion. But I think his stuff looks kind of stiff. I think his stuff actually looks stronger when he's just penciling and he's not inking. Because, like, he did this JSA special with the Kingdom Come Superman. Mm-hmm. And I thought his art there looked great because he just did pencils. I think whenever he relies on his photo references too much, when he dresses up his friends in costume and stuff, I'm not quite sold on his work. But if you
get, yeah, I mean it's I haven't really like I haven't like what are some stories that he's done where he's just, you know, where he's had someone like assisting with the pencils and everything, just like that Kingdom Come Superman one.
That's the only time he's ever done something that looked like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And I was happy that he did that because, hey, you know what? This guy actually has the goods, but he's not going to do sequentials like that anymore. I doubt it. Paying him massive amounts of money to do cover.
I love the fact that Alex Ross, like, will not draw modern characters. Like, he gets into a hissy fit and he's like, I don't want to draw Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern, just Hal Jordan, Alan Scott.
Yeah, I don't get that either. That just says that, you know, he doesn't know anything. I mean, he doesn't even know who Deadpool was.
Remember? Oh, he had no idea who Deadpool was.
When he did Earth X, there's a character named Daredevil, right, in Earth X, and
I kind of dug Earth X. I like the concept of it.
I love that book, and there was a character. You know who the Daredevil character is there, right? And he's a fun...
Oh, Daredevil was revealed to be Deadpool? I never knew that, actually.
No, that's not what I'm saying. people were speculating on who Daredevil was, and people were asking him if it was Deadpool, and his reply was he doesn't know. He doesn't know who Deadpool is. I'm like, what?
How can you not know?
And
I never read Planet X myself.
Oh, Paradise X.
Paradise X. I read Earth X, Universe
that,
X.
That Paradise X had a strong start, but it really went off the rails because it just went a little too crazy towards the end. But
yeah,
I mean, I haven't
read that. Was that the first time that they had introduced the idea that the Asgardians were actually aliens that had been given, like, form based on man's worship of these?
Yeah.
Because that was a pretty original idea, I thought.
Yeah, I think, that was in Earth-X, and I always thought that was great because, their power or how powerful they are is determined by how people believe in them. And I always thought that was a great concept, too, and I think it works well because it explains, them dealing with gods and what have you. That's why you can have all these different kinds of gods because different civilizations believe in different things, and these aliens kind of took these forms because – all these people believe that that's what they are. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, so it makes sense in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Now, the most retarded thing I ever saw from those books, though, the dumbest thing I ever saw in those books was what happened to Cable.
Because what happened to Cable?
When they revealed Paradise X, that he's literally, like, his techno-organic virus thing, whatever, went so bad that he's basically just – well, he's been stuck to the ground. Literally, he's like a puddle of techno-organic matter in the ground – kind of forming his face. I'm like, what did he do to him? That's so dumb.
Why, Cable?
It's like...
where are your pouches?
it's like they decided to bury like the cool 90s characters by doing that to them. And, I mean, look what they did to Wolverine. Like, the cool characters...
Wolverine was a fat old man who, yelled at Jean Grey. And then, they brought in... or whatever, from alternate realities.
Yeah, they brought an alternate reality Wolverine, like the Days of Future Past Wolverine.
He just looked at himself in this reality and was just like, no, I don't like what just happened.
And then they revealed that the Wolverine was part of some weird race of wolf men or whatever. I'm like, oh, no. That's enough.
Thank you, Jeff Loeb.
Man, that was before Jeff Loeb, too. Before.
Oh, was it really?
That was before.
Maybe that's where I got the idea
thing.
From.
Yeah, that was before that. Man.
Oh, wow.
That was something. I didn't even finish that arc. I mean, as much as I like Simone Bianchi, and I generally like Jeff Loeb, but that particular story was just awful.
Jeff Loeb, for me, is very, very hit or miss. He'll either come up with something that's really great, like Batman, Long Halloween, and Dark Victory, or just let other stuff.
The thing about Loeb's stuff is he is very much a writer who caters to the newbie, to the new guy. And he's also, much like Brian Bendis, he likes to do stories based on whoever he's working with. And I think he does really well with that. He's spending too much time tailoring it to whoever he's working with, but sometimes he forgets to think about the audience, to the rest of the audience.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, I'm like I said, if I pick up a Hulk book because
you
want to
see Hulk fighting.
Yeah, Hulk fighting. I want to have a good time reading a book. I don't want to think too much. That's not what I buy that book for. And he delivers every single month back when he was writing it. So I have no complaints.
It's funny that you mentioned the Hulk because I was actually earlier this afternoon. I went sometimes I'll just throw my hand into one of the boxes of my comics and pull out stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was reading Bruce Timm's original Hulk run, which is basically it's like the run where the Hulk never shows up. Like I was reading four issues, and they were surprisingly enough drawn by Stuart Immonen. Which I had no idea he had drawn that originally, but the Hulk doesn't show up for five issues, and they're talking about all these conspiracies within conspiracies within conspiracies, and I'm just like, could the Hulk show up and punch something, please?
that Bruce Jones run had such a good start. I thought the first year was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And again, much like you know, a lot of good things, you know, eventually it just came off the rails.
Kind of, woo, like, you know.
And and you mentioned Stuart Immonen, like, around that time. He was doing a lot of different books. Like, I was reading some of the Dan Jurgens Thor run recently, and I found...
Which Dan Jurgens run?
The Thor books that he did.
Oh, the Thor stuff. Oh, yeah, yeah. Man, I grew up on those.
I read a lot of stuff recently. And it's like everything is collected now because they collected the first couple years worth of that stuff in trade not too long ago, and now they're on the run where Odin got killed to begin with. And,
oh wow, they're pretty far along then.
Yeah, the death of Odin stuff was actually illustrated by Immonen. And,
oh really?
Yeah, he drew that stuff. Like, and he did. He also did the Nuff Said, the Silent issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's, and he did that, and his stuff was amazing even back then. Like, I swear to God, dude, if there's one single artist out there who's probably heads and shoulders above everyone else as far as storytelling, versatility, mm-hmm. and all that, it has to be Immonen, because that dude can draw anything.
It's tough to find an artist who can really do a great combination of action scenes as well as emotional scenes, and I think that, like, definitely his run with Bendis on New Avengers currently just goes to show you his strengths as an artist, because you have basically, like, what is it, like 5 or 6 issues where they're fighting all of the magical demons that are coming through these portals, and then there's an issue where they're just all eating breakfast discussing how they get paid.
And that's both really good. He draws a good-looking breakfast spread, man. That makes me hungry. I want to sit down and eat breakfast with the Avengers.
You just see Wolverine eating, like, all this stuff, and it's just like, man, I want some of that.
See Wolverine eating, like, man, that dude is hungry. He probably just came in from L.A., from San Francisco, Utopia.
Just jumping from the moon to L.A. to X-Force to Uncanny X-Men to...
He has to go to Arizona next and go to the X Cavern and do a planning meeting. Then he has to catch a ride to San Francisco and hop onto Utopia.
Just say his secondary mutant power is to teleport already. It'll solve so many problems.
I like the we mentioned Jason Aaron briefly, but
yeah,
the short story he did with Wolverine and Spider-Man to explain how Wolverine lives his day to day, and I thought that was fantastic.
I love that. I think that the Spider-Man-Wolverine dynamic that has kind of been created in this past, you know, this age of the New Avengers and everything is one of, like, the best things to come out of it, because they have a serious bromance going.
Yeah,
and it's just funny to see, you know, Wolverine acting as a big brother, because, I don't know, did you read that Zeb Wells Amazing Spider-Man story that was Happy Birthday, Logan? Where it was like that Logan and Spider-Man walk into a bar, and Logan just proceeds to get shit-faced, and Spider-Man keeps stopping him from killing people.
Seriously, they're such a great pair. I remember the beginning of the American Sun storyline where you have Wolverine and Spidey, like, perched in some building, and they're looking at Avengers Tower, and they're talking, and Spider-Man was contemplating just killing Norman Osborn. And then they just did a fist bump at the end of their conversation, which was great.
They throw in a nice little, like, slam against George W. Bush, too.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, at least we got the last Maniac out. Fist bump.
Yeah, that was some good stuff, man. Spidey and Wolverine, I'm really happy to see those two teaming up. I think there's so much potential about that pairing. And they're just a great odd couple type of thing.
Yeah, it works really well. The same regard, kind of, as, you know, when you put Superman and Batman together, it's kind of like that, but to a much more, you know, kind of extreme on both ends. You know, you could argue that Spider-Man's kind of more of a Boy Scout than Superman is, and that Wolverine is kind of darker than Batman is. So when you put them together, it's just kind of funny to see, you know, how it plays out. And they both like banging redheads. So really,
yeah,
they have something
true
in common.
I wasn't even thinking of the redhead part, but yeah. All right.
Redheads that are permanently out of their grasp now.
And we want to jump on to our next bit here. We have some questions for you from Twitter, actually.
Oh, awesome.
I made an announcement earlier that we will be doing a talk here. And
Before you ask the questions, just to answer Matt's questions that I'm sure will already be asked. No, Matt, I will not sleep with you. Stop sending me naked pictures of yourself, please.
Oh, well, Matt has questions. Matt Terry, rather, and he had the first question. Why are you so stupid, and why aren't you on Twitter? Also, why are you so racist?
Also, why am I so – what was the last one? Why am I
why
so
are
what?
You so racist?
Against who?
but this is what Matt Terry wants to know, and so we answered
him. Okay. Why am I so stupid? Years of watching TV and reading comic books.
That's a terrible answer.
Why aren't I on Twitter? Good question. I should get on Twitter. And why am I – what was it? Why am I racist?
Yes.
Why am I so racist? Because I'm white.
Wow. Okay. The next question comes from Travis Holyfield, and he asks, why are you not as funny as Uncle Yo?
Oh, first off, that's ridiculous. I mean, for those who don't know, Uncle Yo is a kind of a geek stand-up comedian who originally tried to be in our geek comedy tour. Then we turned him down. So he went off on his own and proceeds to do these shows that are like 3 hours long where it's just him rambling on about nonsense. So why aren't I as funny as Uncle Yo? Well, that's up for that's based on some people's opinions, Travis. But thank you for your question.
Next question is from Jennifer Langen, and she asks, isn't the life of a comic book nerd by definition one giant pratfall, except for Harvey Pekar? He was sad pants.
In some ways it is, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, that's kind of starting to wane off a little. I think the comic books are more accepted in general, but, I can certainly see how it would be, considered a, giant pratfall throughout life, and it certainly helped in my comedy.
And the next question is again from Travis Holyfield, and he asks, what are you wearing? Describe it slow and sexy.
Right now I am wearing a It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia t-shirt that says Patty's Irish Pub, South Philadelphia, and I am wearing boxers that is Homer Simpson on a rooftop during Christmas with Do Ho Ho written on the leg.
Wow.
I could not make that up if I tried.
Matt Terry has another question, and he says, I'll read it verbatim. Ask
okay.
Evan, fuck you, but make it a question somehow.
Do you want to try to make that a question?
I give up. I'm not. Next time I ask for questions from Twitter, Matt Terry is
well,
bad.
Thank you for your question, Matt.
Matt Terry is bad from asking questions. And
banned forever. Damn you, Matt.
And finally, the last question comes from Simon Hausner, and he says, ask Evan if Matt Terry is giving him a broner right now.
Matt is always giving me a broner.
Oh, jeez.
Who is Simon on the board?
He is Jew Mafia, the famous Jew Mafia that Matt.
I actually have never gotten the chance to meet him because he mostly does West Coast conventions, right?
West Coast and Midwest. But
yeah, I haven't gotten a chance to go to many of those.
He's looking into possibly coming to New York this year, so you might get to meet him or even room with him.
Oh, very cool. And I always endorse people to come to the Baltimore Con. as for me personally, like, in terms, obviously it's not better than New York Comic Con because of, you know, the people I get to hang out with, but in terms of, like, the convention itself and, like, the way that it's presented, Baltimore is kind of my favorite because it's not as, you know, overly crowded as New York. They really focus on,
the artists and the writers.
I've
been to Baltimore, and I love it, but you really should try the Seattle Con.
Oh, Seattle? Then that just happened, right?
Yeah, Matt was there, and he is a fan, and it might become a regular thing for him, too.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I might try to go to that next year. I haven't really been to Seattle before, so that would be kind of... That's where Twilight took place.
No, it was in a suburb in Washington, I believe, Washington State, but not in Seattle. Don't sully that city.
Okay.
How dare you, sir? That's just wrong. Oh, that's just awful.
I'm sorry. No one should ever be associated with Twilight Kids.
No, I'm being a little mean. I mean, I don't care for that at all, for that stuff. But you know what?
Yeah.
Those people that a lot of people from our tribe kind of hate on, they're just geeking out over that thing, over something too. You know, like, we're geeking out over comics, they're geeking out over that. And you know what? Why are we going to be assholes about it? We don't need to.
Yeah, they have a love for something that we don't understand, you know. But if the X-Men has taught us nothing, it is to not fear and try to kill what we do not understand, rather to embrace it and hold it close to ourselves.
We're not like the Ghostbusters here, you know.
No, we're not.
Those murderous Ghostbusters.
Murder and rape and all those things that are associated with the Ghostbusters.
Jesus, dude. Yeah. At any rate, Evan, we are we've reached the point of the end here. Where can we find you on the internet?
Where can you find me on the internet? I have a lot of different places that you can find me. Number one, you can find me on my, if you want to read funny things that I have written, you can go to www.evanisfunny.blogspot.com, and that's a nice little conglomerate of a lot of funny things that I've written. If you'd
I like the fact that you lied in your URL because you're certainly not.
You bastard! I knew you'd catch me on that. I was trying to.
I didn't even know that existed.
Fastly go away from that. It's a dead lie, kids. I'm not funny at all.
No, they pay me. I'm just giving you crap. I didn't know you had a blog though, so it's good to know that. What were you going to mention next?
Thor the Musical, you can look that up on Facebook. We have a video, a 15-minute video of a recent performance that we did in Baltimore at the Auto Bar. If you want to check out upcoming shows that I'm going to do with the Geek Comedy Tour, you can just go to www.geekcomedytour.com and check that out. It has a listing of upcoming shows that we'll be doing. I think the biggest one that we're doing next will be in April, and that's at RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology.
Cool.
And that's always a fun time. Yeah.
And they can find you on Twitter at twitter.com/EvanValentine, right?
Yes, I'm instantly going to create that after this because Matt has shamed me into doing it and shown me even more how technologically retarded I am when it comes to machines. I don't understand how they work, Matt. I'm going to try to set up a Twitter account and stay in touch with everyone. So
that's good. That is good. See, I'm glad that you are taking this step into technological modernity.
Normalcy.
Yeah, you're taking.
I'm gonna put on my technological pants and do this.
You got techno pants. You got like circuitries and all that circuit boards and all that crap on it.
Yes. But yeah, I think that's it for website plugs and all that.
We will include all these links in the show notes, so you guys can just check that out. And
very cool.
Once again, thanks for taking the time to chat with us here. And
anytime, Pat. Thanks, man.
Yeah, I really had a good time. Well, we'll do this again, and we'll just talk more comic stuff next time.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. All right, sir. Until next week. You could, of course, find me on Twitter at twitter.com/PatLoika. or go to my blog at patloika.com, and you'll find all my links and all my social networking and all my nonsense. So until next week, you guys take care.
Take it easy.
Cigar slug, come on, hey, y'all, Glenn. We in the cabin playing backgammon. Gorilla monster slammers, rugby tires. Tries, you will die, son. Green medicine, blow veterans. Running the Adidas store. Six more velours, drawers, feather skin. Head cut it up, hollering. 7 through 3 sixes. Know we hate the devil, where your llama dick. Can't stand the other side. Niggas know we rich, the color guys. Noose up your mother, true lullabies. Gangsta ever ready. Take off my shirt, no batteries, nigga. Just one mean magnum killer. Snowmobiles jetting out the timber. Phil Chef altitude. Yo, I can't breathe. Check the splendor. Brazilian honey dip. I'm on my writing game, nigga. Times is gruffing. Timberland cuffing. One knee of Gia Bolleria. Hope we can pull it back. My throat, my only weapon. Blow the beat up.
Stuck pillow pads in the rat holes. Reduce that faggot ass nigga who wanna jump like a frog to a tadpole. Gag it up. Sliding through the ER. Batted up a tube in your dick. You can't piss when standing up. Hands are shaking. Doctors is taking the operation.
Now he might not live.
So they start debating, doing bad shape. In the neck of New York, you're slithering ways. Lay with you a bad snake. Smash, bait, eight stab holes in your shoulder blade. You're wilding on a stretcher and shit. They try to hold your legs. Nah, don't hold his legs. Tell that bitch ass nigga to chill for something. It's meat like bolognese. Got gophers that sleep in the woods. Car hard down. Padlock your bow-legged spot. Where your rocks now? You ain't moving no crack. Use a moving ass rack. After you lay up in that morgue, I'ma fuck your back. Yeah, nigga, die slow with your smirk on. Night, night, lights dimming down. Get your mirth on. Later, I'll see you in hell. Get your burn on. Filled with a bombing and fluid. Get your shirt on.
My shirt on in the hood when I ride by. My eyes looking like I learned how to skydive. The world is yours. This rules you abide by. Ride with the fly guy on I-9. They said a nigga returned, but I never left. I told Big L through me, we can resurrect. I'm that nigga like Puff and LOX. I took one L in life and still double X. Brick City where I breathe on the trees at. The E's and M&M's, I need a relapse. And bitches, grab my mic, give me feedback. Reggie, you an asshole.
Baby, I'll be
yeah. I get cocky when the beat bumping. You know you're doing it when your tire lip rubbing. I keep a freak and I call a chicken meat. Cause this super bad nigga, she make loving.
Things get killed in my hallways, we parlay. My beat been killing me all day. Your boy down for lock like them killers in Broadway. It's all work and no play. Why? Cause this block ain't nothing like Broadway. Revenge is sweeter than sorbet. You all become believers once this heat is in your face. Just a part of my feng shui. Y'all don't want no part of the gun spray. I would hate to pull it in one straight. That's where the innocence by stay. We trapped inside these tenements like damn. Why mama trying to feed us the spice tab? Connects trying to cheat us with light grams. Cody Fitness try to lighten they send a snitch in the white man. Turn state seven is fam, we ain't gelling. Felons ain't felons no more, they straight telling. Ain't nothing worse than a rat, you can't smell it. And ain't nothing worse than a trap, you can't sell it.